So we're going to begin. Today we're going to see the last topic that we're going to cover in this course officially, which is quantum energy teleportation, which is the brainchild of Masahiro Hota, professor in Tohoku University. This is a very interesting protocol and has implications. So I'm going to show you what quantum energy teleportation is in a very simple model, minimal QET. So two level, we're going to consider two-level systems. So if you want the qubits. The whole idea of quantum energy teleportation is enabling, so if you want teleporting energy, if you want doing an operation local here and obtaining classical information from that, or quantum information from that operation, sending the information over, and with that information, the person somewhere else can actually act locally on the system and extract energy. Look what that means. So energy doesn't have to travel from A to B. Information travels. Only information travels, and that enables energy extraction. And we do that, of course, at the price of paying entanglement. And this is will become way more interesting in a particular case, is when we have a ground state of the system, the local vacuum, zero energy on average, right? And we're going to enable B to be able to extract energy from the vacuum locally by measuring the vacuum somewhere else, sending the information, not altering the state around B. B still measures the local vacuum, what looks like the vacuum, and is able to extract correlations. Sorry, extract energy. Okay? So this is kind of, in a way, a counterpart to entanglement harvesting. We are going to consume entanglement in the system to enable the extraction of zero-point energy fluctuations. Extraction of energy from zero-point energy. How is that? We're breaking the passivity of passive states with this. All right. So to present what the... It's very transparent, so no magic. This is the kind of thing that can lead people to believe, oh, that's probably BS, right? Because how can you do that? Like, you interact with the ground state locally, it's something that looks like the ground state, no way that you're going to be able to extract any work, right? Let me show you in a model that is super transparent, that all the calculations are qubit kind of calculations, all right? And then we will move to quantum fields and see what the implications are in quantum fields, all right? All right, so minimal QET. So I have two qubits, A and B. The protocol is going to be about, I'm going to do a measurement in this simple scenario that I'm going to tell you. I'm going to do a projective measurement, but keep in mind that no need for projective measurements. In fact, in a tutorial, what you're going to do is do the whole thing in a chain of harmonic oscillators with POVMs, like proper measurements, okay? But for simplicity here, let's do the PVM, which is fast, okay? But the idea is that you have someone that can measure qubit A, okay? And that someone will measure qubit A, and it will measure an observable of qubit A, which has two values, one or zero, if you want. And whatever they obtain in that measurement, they send it to B. And B will do a unitary that depends on the outcome of that measurement. Okay? And we will discuss if the energy travels, if it doesn't travel, travel from A to B, what does it mean if you can extract energy, when you can't, and so on and so forth. So I set up this Hamiltonian. This Hamiltonian, you can ignore, so I added multiples of the identity to all the terms. Multiples of the identity is just a trivial addition. So it's modifying the zero-point energy if you want. And this is just for calculational convenience. I want things to be very simple. Instead of being constant factors, I want some things to be zero. So I added this bias to the Hamiltonians. It doesn't change the physics. You can do the same thing without. It's just a little bit more lines in your equations. But you get the same result. Okay, constant factor in a Hamiltonian doesn't change the physics. All right? A multiple of the identity. So basically, what we have here is a qubit A that has an energy gap between the set component of spin, or you know, the has an energy gap of h, oh, of difference. Qubit B, same thing, energy gap of h. Well, actually 2h, no, because it's sigma set. So okay, 2h, right? You get minus 1 and 1 for the eigenvalues. 2h, and you have an interaction Hamiltonian that the coupling strength is this k here. Well, there's a two factor, of course, but it's k is basically the coupling strength, and I'm coupling the x observable, sigma x to sigma x of qubit A and qubit B. So they interact. All right? This, you can think of it as two electrons interacting with magnetic moments, if you want, in the x direction. All right, so so then if you have that Hamiltonian, oh, the front one doesn't move. Maybe I can do the trick like where this is stuck somehow and unstuck it by doing this. No. All right, well, we'll move there then. This is the Hamiltonian, right? And we can start from zero temperature, from the ground state of the system. So as you see, there's Hamiltonian. The interaction Hamiltonian does not commute with the free Hamiltonian, okay? So it's likely that the ground state has entanglement, actually, in this case. Let's see. The ground state, you can compute it, and it's got this form, 1 over square root 2. Root of 1 minus f hk divided by h square, 1a, 1b, plus, or minus, sorry, square root 2 of 1 plus f of hk divided by h square, 0a, 0b. And of course, this one and one, let's call it new, is, sigma z nu. Okay. It's 1 and sigma, this is what I used, yes, sigma nu z on 0 nu is minus 0 nu. All right, so 0 and 1 are the two eigenstates of sigma z. All right, so you can tell here, right, if the coupling strength is 0, then this factor here goes to 0. Should go to 0. Yeah, because f goes to 1. Is that right? Let's see. F is this expression here. If the coupling strength k goes to 0, this is 1. This is 1, this shouldn't be 1 over h square. This is go to h, right? Let's see. I don't want to have typos here. Let's see, when k goes to 0, this thing is 1, the function. So what happens when h is 0, when k goes to infinity, this thing is 0. Okay, good. So I don't need this. My bad. I knew I may have a typo here. This is what you get. It's an easy one. It's diagonal. It's a 2x2 matrix. The check that I'm doing to check if I have typos is that I know that if the coupling is 0, right, then the Hamiltonian has to be, sorry, the ground state has to be 0, 0, obviously, because it's just sigma z. Question?
When k is 0, if f go to h, not to 1.
F goes to h?
Yes.
Oh my god, the square root. Thank you. There was no typo here.
Yeah.
Saved my life.
There was a square that was...
Oh, it was a square. My bad. So there was a typo, and it wasn't the typo I corrected, but thank you. That's the kind of class participation that I like. Perfect. I mean, everything that I have is correct. I knew that this problem may have a typo, but I just want to be consistent. Everything that I have after doesn't use this formula from the board. It uses the formula proper. It's just copying that it might be a typo. All right, then. So this is the ground state, and you can check that when there's no coupling, of course, this is just 0, 0. And when the coupling starts increasing, then the ground state has more entanglement. That entanglement is a particular kind of entanglement. It's a two-level system, though, but this entanglement is what we call max rank entanglement, which means that the Smith decomposition of this has terms in all the dimensions of the Hilbert space. Okay? The rank is the maximum possible, is rank 2 in this case. Having max rank entanglement guarantees that what we're going to do works, by the way. It's a sufficient condition. But then again, let's for now just go with it. So, protocol. We're going to do the following. start from the ground state. Then, two, Alice carries out a projective measurement of sigma x a. Repeated many times. So this is a process that is repeated many times. Okay, we're going to do statistics on this. Many times. This, of course, will have an energy cost let's call it E sub projective measurement on A greater than zero. Of course, right? You have the ground state, and you're doing something to the ground state, in particular projective measurement, that is non-trivial, doesn't leave the state the same. The ground state is non-degenerate, therefore, this is going to cost you energy. You're going to move the system away from the ground state, okay? Which can only go up. So that's going to cost you energy. I call this the energy cost, EPA. Is the energy cost of the projective measurement that Alice does. All right, now three. The result of the measurement is relayed. So let's call the result of the measurement something. Let's call it alpha. Alpha, of course, can be either 1 or 2. So it's, oh, sorry, 1 or 2. Plus or minus 1, right? The measurement of sigma x, so either plus or minus 1, is an ounce to Bob through, say, a classical channel. It could also be a quantum channel, but let's just assume that it's classical because it's the simplest one. That is supposed, that is fast enough for this to be impressive. Fast enough. By fast enough, I mean it's faster than the speed at which so you see, you made a perturbation in A. If you let the system evolve with that Hamiltonian, the perturbation will propagate from A to B. You want to do all this kind of instantaneously. So you need the communication channel to be much faster than the velocity of propagation of the perturbation in the chain here. Who can tell me what's the velocity of propagation? What controls the velocity of propagation here? Anyone? The strength of the coupling. The stronger the coupling, the faster the evolution. Remember, is this thing, the only terms that are in non-local is this term. This is the term that's going to propagate what you do on A to B. And the evolution with this has a time scale k. The exponential of that times t, if you want, has a time scale k. So k is what controls the time scale of propagation of the interaction, of the perturbation, faster than 1 over k. Yep. I can't hear you.
How are you associating an energy cost, since in general this won't leave the system in an energy eigenstate?
Average. Okay. I'm doing it many times, and I want to know what the average energy cost will be. All right?
What do you mean? Average of what?
Of the many times. So average in both sense, in the quantum sense, which engulfs doing it many times, and also there is a quantum system. It's a statistical treatment of this, density matrix-like. So yeah, energy cost, I mean, on average, so definition of energy cost of a process, right? Average energy cost. Delta U average is trace of rho sub zero H minus trace of rho sub one H. So the expectation of the energy before minus the expectation after. That's what I call the energy cost. That's what I call E. All right? That's my definition of energy cost. It's the difference in the average energy that you had. So So on average, this is the amount of energy you have to put into the system in order to do this process. All right, as an external person doing operations like this projection or this unitary later on. Again, everyone, it's important we understand this. Those questions are really good. It's important we understand what we're doing. Otherwise, it makes no sense to talk about this. All right. So the result of the measurement is announced to both through a classical channel that is fast enough, meaning much faster than the velocity that the propagations, that the perturbations propagate from A to B. In our workings, we're going to assume instantaneous. Okay. Now, when we get relativistic, we revise all that. Huh? But for now, let's just assume that we have a channel that's much faster than the interaction propagation speed. All right, four. With the information received, Bob carries out a local unitary on B that depends on alpha. We will show that Bob can pick U alpha so that the energy cost of this step is negative. All right. So the idea here, the protocol is Alice does a projective measurement, of course, puts energy into the system. That energy doesn't propagate to B. We're doing this much faster. That energy doesn't move from A. It's still there. So B still looks locally like the ground state looks. So it's kind of the vacuum locally. It's literally the vacuum locally. And then Bob uses the information received from A to do a local unitary on B. And that local unitary can be chosen, we will show, as to yield energy instead of requiring energy. OK? That's kind of cool. Keep in mind, this is locally the vacuum. Like, imagine that we have the vacuum state of a field here. If someone in Australia does something to the field, it's going to take a while to propagate here. If we do operations here before that comes here, this is the vacuum to us for all intents and purposes. This is the vacuum, right? This is what, for all intents and purposes, B, Bob, is seeing the vacuum of the system locally. All right? So this is the key of this process. All right. Let's do it. Step one. Average energy cost of PVM on A. All right, so the projector Alice applies the following projector, P, function of the outcome, right? If the outcome is 1, he's projecting over the eigenstate of sigma x with eigenvalue 1. If it's minus 1, projects the eigenstate of eigenvalue minus 1. So in general, the projector is 1 over 2 identity plus alpha sigma x a. All right? That's what she's doing. If alpha is 1, it's projecting eigenvalue 1. If alpha is minus 1, it's projecting eigenvalue minus 1. So in a single shot, experiment, the state that Alice gets, state, let's call it PM for projective measurement, of course, will depend on alpha. It's applying a projective measurement, so you renormalize on the probability of getting the value alpha. This is small p, yeah? And then multiply by the projector on A, outcome alpha on the ground state, where, of course, as I said, small pa of alpha is the probability of getting the outcome alpha. All right. All right. So far, so good? All right. So, of course, this is a single shot experiment, right? Alice does the whole thing many times. So Alice is a process. Alice does a measurement on the system, sends the outcome to Bob. Bob does something. Then they receive a new system. They do it again. They reset the system. They do it again. And they do it again. And they do it again. OK? So if you do it many times, what you're getting, repeating many times without knowing the outcome of any particular, so talking averages, doing statistics on doing it many times, then what we get is, sure, OK, so the state row one after the step one is, OK, the sum over alpha equals plus minus 1, which are the possible outcomes, the probability of getting this is small p, the probability of getting the value alpha, and the state that you get when you get the value alpha. Agreed? This is what happens when you do it many times. You get with probability p alpha, pa alpha, you get the state psi pm alpha. All right, so this thing is simplifiable to PA projector acting of alpha acting on the ground state. Okay, just substituting the state here, and the square root cancels. The square root times the square root cancels the PA alpha. All right, nice. So this is the state after getting an ensemble of systems like that, analyze every time there's a projective measurement. Okay? So this is the state of the ensemble after doing that many times. What was the energy cost of this? So let's compute the energy cost. Computing the energy cost, EPA, is, of course, the trace of, the trace of rho 1 full Hamiltonian minus the trace of rho 0, which is the ground state, full Hamiltonian. So useful expressions to simplify the calculations here. And that's why I picked the F here. The expectation value of every single of the energy densities, if you want, this thing on the ground state, the expectation value of HB on the ground state, and the expectation value of V on the ground state, they are all equal to the expectation value of H, the whole Hamiltonian on the ground state, equal to 0. That's why I picked the F, to simplify things like that. So we have 0 total energy, but also 0 energy densities, OK? Which kind of makes it even more impressive. Huh? This, oh, yeah, the energy density is non-zero, and therefore, no. This is all 0. That's why I biased it with an F here. So everything cancels nicely like that. OK, so nice. So we know that the energy of the ground state is 0. Therefore, in this case, well, this is an eigenstate of the full Hamiltonian. So this is just the trace of rho 1 h that we can compute. So if we compute it, we get the following. So this is sum alpha equals plus minus 1 ground PA alpha H PA alpha G. And this is equal to, you decompose it in 3 terms if you want. So alpha plus minus 1. And then you have 3 terms. You have the G PA alpha HA PA alpha G plus the sum alpha equals plus minus 1 of G P A alpha H B P A alpha ground plus the sum alpha equals plus minus 1 of the G P A alpha V P A alpha round. So to simplify this, I'm gonna tell you the calculation is simple. It's simple algebra, it's the two level systems here. But I'll tell you what I'm gonna use. I'm gonna use the fact that P alpha of course of alpha, P A, sorry, of alpha of course commutes with HB. But critically, it also commutes with V. Right, because we're projecting on the X, sigma X observable, and the interaction one has identity that commutes with everything and sigma X's. Okay? So using these two commutations is really easy. You can act with a projector twice, get only one projector. I think the calculation simplifies a lot. If you want, I can also, I'm gonna use this. This is just very easy, but I'll give you just what you use. I don't want to copy, the only thing is I don't want to copy super long formulas, so we run out of time. So this thing, on G, oh sorry, with a sigma x in here, which is what you get from the projector, right? What you need to use for the projector. On G, this thing is proportional to G sigma BZ sigma x A on G. Oh, this is an A, of course. And this is zero. So, let's do the preset. I want the that one. So, and similarly, we can also use, I'm gonna write here another useful expression that I use. The sum alpha equals plus minus one of G P A H B P A alpha G, this thing is equal to zero. You're gonna be able to write it as something that goes like this, or something that goes with the expectation only, and the two terms are zero when you substitute in the P. So using all that, you found eventually EPA, it's equal to the, again, trace of rho one full Hamiltonian. And this is giving you f of hk, which is larger than zero. That's what you get when you substitute everything in. Don't need to believe me. Repeat the calculations. They're very simple. They're just long lines to copy on a board. And it's already 36 past, so. All right, cool. So we store this. This is useful information. I guess I'll have to erase something. It's kind of sad. Let's do steps 2 and 3. So, steps 2 and 3. We put together a unitary operation on B. So, local, so LOCC, well, LOCC you've used, right, in your courses? You know what LOCC means? It's a local operation plus classical communication. So Bob performs a alpha dependent unitary. And I'm gonna pick the following one. U B alpha is gonna be cosine theta identity minus I alpha sine theta sigma y. B. So theta here is going to be given. I'm going to pick theta. Theta is such that the cosine of 2 theta is equal to h squared plus 2 k squared divided by square root of h squared plus 2k squared plus something else, which guarantees that this thing is less than 1, k squared in absolute value. So you can always pick it like that. And for the sine of 2 theta, it's going to be hk divided by the same denominator. Right, so this guarantees that the square of the two things add up to 1. This is a valid choice. And the arguments, these things are between minus 1 and 1. So these are a valid choice for the cosine and the sine. You can find thetas so that this is true. And alpha, of course, is the outcome of the measurement. It's a minus 1 or a plus 1. All right, so if you do that, then you say that, OK, in a single shot experiment, what Bob gets is just, all right, so Bob gets the, applies the unitary, or depends on alpha, on the psi pm on alpha. That's what he would get in a single shot. Agreed, everyone? So it's what Alice left the system like in a single shot, and then applying the informed unitary. So he receives the information from Alice and applies the unitary that depends on alpha instantaneously. So there's no time for propagation of anything here. All right, so if we apply this, if we do that, we get that this is 1 over square root of PA of alpha, UB of alpha. Let's call it UB. All right. UB of alpha acting on the ground state. All right, that's what it is. This goes like this. Huh? Sorry about the slanted equality. All right. Of course, we have an ensemble of these processes, right? We have an ensemble of Alice does her thing, sends the information over, Bob does her thing many times. So in an ensemble, what we get is repeated many times. You get that rho 2, it's equal to the sum over all the, sometimes you would get a 1, sometimes you would get a minus 1, so you average over the outcomes with the probability of getting one outcome or the other. This thing will be UB alpha PA alpha ground PA alpha UB dagger alpha. Where?
Before the repeating many times.
Here?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Thank you. Thank you. Precisely. All right, so yeah, then we do the thing many times. This is the state of the ensemble of doing it many times. And then we can compute the average energy cost. So we compute E of UB, which is going to be equal to the trace of rho 2 h minus the trace of rho 1 h. So basically, the trace of rho 2 h minus the energy cost of the projection that Alice did. All right, so we do. We notice, so using, again, I'm not going to, it's like two-line calculation that I'm not going to write. But using that, of course, UB of alpha commutes with HA. Okay. Then we get the following. So E UB, it's equal to sum over alpha G PA alpha UB dagger alpha HB plus V U alpha G. Again, two lines to get to this, two simple lines. And we use here also to get there that, of course, P alpha of PA of alpha commute with HB to move things around. And also that PA alpha commutes with V. Then you get that. Now, if you do all the calculations, if you substitute in the Hamiltonians and the states as computed, then one gets that E UB it's equal to minus 1 divided by H squared plus K squared. That multiplies HK sine of 2 theta minus H squared plus 2K squared 1 minus cosine of 2 theta. All right. Now, the nice thing is that you can prove that this thing can be negative. So if you pick, if we pick a case where theta is between 0 and something positive but much smaller than 1, okay, then we can expand this in series and simplify to show that EUB, you don't need to do that, it's just to say it analytically. You can just plug numbers here and see that this is sometimes positive, sometimes negative. But in particular for cases where H is, theta is small and positive, then you get that this is equal to approximately, hold on a sec, like that. That minus 2 HK theta divided by H squared plus K squared, which happened to be less than 0. So let's gather all that we've done so far. What we've proven so far is that it is possible that Alice does a measurement, projective measurement on qubit A, relays the information to B, B performs an informed unitary on, well, Bob performs an informed unitary on B, and they repeat this many times, right? And what is happening here is that Bob is extracting energy. The average cost of the whole process produces energy for Bob. The unitary is actually giving energy back to Bob. And this is kind of cool, because keep in mind that Bob still sees B the same way as he was in the ground state. We allowed no time for the perturbation made by the projective measurement on A to propagate to B. This is not a dynamical effect. There is energy. Of course, if Bob does only those unitaries, we're going to prove it, though. So OK, can Bob get negative energy without knowing alpha? We're going to prove that Bob needs to know alpha in order to extract energy. Otherwise, it's not going to be negative. We're going to prove it. So this is kind of cool. It's like, well, the vacuum state, the ground state is passive. There's no way that I can, on average, get energy. So sometimes I'm going to get a fluctuation that gives me energy back. Sometimes I'm going to get it down. And it's the ground state. So if I change the state, I'm going to increase its energy, right? So in the end, on average, so in the end, I'm going to be paying to do whatever I want to the vacuum state locally, unless I know something about the vacuum. You see here, the reason is that there's entanglement in the ground state. And A, figuring out information about A, gets B information about the fluctuations on B. So if you had seen Wigner have they seen Wigner functions? Nice. So if you've seen Wigner functions, think of it like this. You start in the ground state, right? Just like Gaussian distribution center at 0 in phase space, right? And then, of course, you do something to the field. So that something, say, that is, let's say, not in my project. So you couple something, you displace the field. That causes you, you know, you displace by an alpha. Then you displace the field like this. How about that? You displace the field by the length alpha and the phase phi or whatever. So you have that. That's going to cost you, right? Because you are putting energy into the field. And now, if Bob tries now to extract energy, so under the dynamics of the field, right, this is going to start rotating in a non-trivial way. But it kind of makes sense. If you're Bob and you start just doing something to the field, you know that it's displaced somehow. OK, fine, so I'm going to start pushing. In what direction? Well, I don't know. So I'm going to just start pushing. On average, you're going to be pushing in the wrong direction. On average, you're going to be moving this to other places that are not closer to the ground state, right? But if you know alpha, if someone told you about alpha, then you can know exactly when to push to try to get it back as much as you can, So you get energy out of it. See what I mean? That's kind of a graphical way of saying it, yeah.
But Bob's energy cost is still positive, right?
No, no.
But how do you define that as the difference between the two energy costs?
Did I do it the opposite? Energy cost of Bob. No, this is the difference, not the energy cost. This is the difference of before Bob doing the unitary, after Bob doing the unitary. So that's the cost of the process. If it's positive, you put energy in. If it's negative, you get energy out. This is the expectation of energy before Bob, that's anything. And this is the expectation after Bob, that's something.
I thought that EPA is the energy cost for Alice.
Correct. The trace of rho 1H is equal to EPA.
So is the trace of rho 2H not the energy cost for Bob?
No. Look, we simplified, right? Go back to EPA. Where's the expression? EPA is rho 1H minus the energy of the ground state, which happens to be zero. That's why it coincides. All right? It's a delta energy here, what we're doing, if you want. It's a change of internal energy, if you want. All right? Clear or not? It's not true that this is, by definition, this. No, no, no. This is the difference between before Alice does something, after Alice does something. Only the expectation of energy before Alice does something is zero because we started in the ground state. Agreed? If not, ask away. I want this to be super clear. I want you to understand, otherwise you won't get the shock later on when we move. Because this is kind of innocent, and it looks innocent, right? Because it's qubits, right? Yeah, just wait. It's going to get super cool, super cool. Anyway. I think it's already cool for qubits, by the way. Yeah? But it gets better in field theory. But if there are problems understanding this in qubits, I definitely want the questions coming. Because otherwise... All right. So if there are more questions so far, then what we got is that Bob, getting information from Alice, is able to do a local operation on something that looks like the ground state and extract energy from it. All right. Where's the eraser? Here. And then you may argue, okay, fine. But what is the role that, okay, no, let's talk about the speed of propagation, right? Let's show you, I discussed that the speed of propagation was given by the inverse of k. Well, that's the time of propagation. So the speed of propagation is given by k. But let's just show it. And then we'll show, with a bit of luck, let's compute the natural energy flow from A to B through the Hamiltonian. Now, of course, I kind of cheated, right? Because here I did instantaneous, so of course, no discussion. Energy doesn't flow. I did it instantaneously. I didn't let the dynamics do anything, propagate the perturbation. But let's see how long it takes to propagate anyways. So if we compute... this is a very simple calculation. If we compute the expectation of HB as a function of time, I don't want to put the T inside. Usually I would write it inside, but I don't want anyone to start thinking, oh, I just changed to Heisenberg or something. There's an expectation value. Doesn't matter. Okay? The expectation of HB as a function of T, it's equal to the sum alpha equals plus minus 1 G PA alpha propagation E with the full Hamiltonian of HB T PA. And yes, I'm doing it Heisenberg picture, but it's an expectation, so it doesn't matter. G. And if you compute that, you get that this is 1 over 2 FHK times 1 minus cosine 4kT. All right? So as you can tell, this still starts growing faster when k is faster. OK? All right. So the perturbation, meaning that, of course, the, what was I talking there? The local energy density here, if you want, at a function of t, is 0 at time 0. okay, and then starts growing, or starts getting negative, I guess. It's negative? Yeah, it's negative, huh? Starts getting negative. The second order, that's a minus, not my bad. Starts growing quadratically in t. Okay? So the speed of propagation is this k. What makes t dimensionless is k. Okay? So one, the time scale in which you start perceiving the effect is 1 over k, as I said. All right, so this is the time it takes for the energy to propagate. So the instantaneous assumption that I made, it just means faster than happening at a time much smaller than 1 over k. And now, finally, let's prove the following. What if Bob does UB without knowledge of alpha? So we have the same, very same protocol, only Alice doesn't tell the outcome alpha to Bob, okay? And then Bob is super powerful, can do any unitary locally on B and repeat the process many times, only that doesn't know the alpha value, okay? Let's see what we get in that case. So this is it really important? Is the communication here really playing a role? Well, let's see. If Bob doesn't know the outcome, in that case, if Bob doesn't know the outcome, then in a single shot, what he has is, let's say he applies, I call it W here to distinguish it from U. W is the unitary that doesn't know about let me just call it UB equals WB without knowledge of alpha. So it applies in a single shot this unitary to PM, all right, which is, of course, 1 over the square root of P alpha, PA alpha, WB PA alpha on G, right? Looks pretty much the same as I wrote here, only instead of UB alpha, I have a W that doesn't depend on alpha, right? What changes, though? What changes when you do the statistical average here? When you do the statistical average, you get that in this case, rho 2 would be equal to WB rho 1 WB dagger. And this is WB sum alpha plus minus 1 PA alpha G G PA alpha. In other words, because W doesn't depend on alpha, I can factor it out of the sum with respect to alpha, which I couldn't before because it's different. Here, U is different for every alpha. This is what we call a classically controlled unitary, whereas here, it doesn't depend on alpha, so you can factor it out of the parentheses. I'm missing one thing, of course. Right. OK. All right, so repeating the calculation for the energy cost here, E of WB, and now you know why I call it W, because I want to use E as well with a subindex that distinguishes it, is the trace of rho 2 H minus the trace of rho 1 H. And this calculation is alpha, sum over alpha, G PA alpha, W dagger, WB dagger, HB plus V, WB, G. All right. Here's the interesting thing, right? Where's all the dependence on alpha? Where's the dependence on alpha here, people? It's the same formula as before. The difference is now, where's the dependence on alpha in this case? Where is it? It's only on the projector, right? OK, but I'm summing over all possible values of alpha. So what is that, though? What is the sum over alpha of P of alpha? People? Come on, you know that one. is the spectral decomposition of identity in the basis of sigma x, agreed? This thing is the freaking identity. All right, so this thing becomes just G WB dagger HB plus V WB G. All right, but here's the thing. We know one thing though. So now we don't have the sum over the projectors and alpha, but we know one thing. The unitary, so we know two things, right? HA and WB, commute, right? Because they act on different Hilbert spaces if you want. Is WB has an identity on A and an unitary on B, right? So they commute, agreed? And we also know that G, WB, HA, WB dagger, or put the dagger here, on the ground, it's equal because they commute. I can pass this W to the other side of the H and make identity, and this is the expectation of HA, zero. Well, I'll write it because this is just the expectation of HA on the ground state that I arrange F so that this thing is zero. Agreed, everyone? Agreed, people? That allows me to put an HA in here if I want in the sum, right? Because it's adding zero. Agreed, everyone? So I can do the energy cost here. EWB. It's equal to G WB dagger HA plus HB plus V WB G. Right? All that I did is added a term that is zero. Right? Oh, cool. But this thing is the full Hamiltonian of the system. Right? Agreed, people? And also, what did I tell you? The ground state, what is the expectation of the ground state on the Hamiltonian? It's zero, right, of the full Hamiltonian, which means that H is a strictly positive operator. Well, strictly non-negative operator. Agreed, people? Now, since H is positive semi-definite, then we know that psi, let's not call it psi, phi, h, phi, whatever phi is larger or equal than zero. Agreed, people? And in particular, if we call WB phi, right, then we know that this thing is larger or equal than zero, so no extraction of energy proved. You see, I needed to include the HA in here because these two things, even though the expectation is zero, the G is not an eigenstate. So to have an eigenstate, I need to add the HA there. That's why I use that trick. So here's the thing. If Bob doesn't receive the classical bit in the whole process, they do the same thing, right? But Bob doesn't receive the classical bit. Even if you give Bob superpowers to choose W, he can do whatever optimize over all the Ws he can do. There's no way that he will ever get energy yield. It's going to, on average, cost energy. So the communication bit is important. Okay? Again, what we are doing here is using the fact that there's correlations in the ground state so that measuring in A and communicating the outcome to B allows B to do an operation that extracts energy locally from the ground state. So we're unlocking the zero-point energy fluctuations that there are on B through the use of information. All right? Any questions about the protocol? Is that clear? I think the minimal case is super nice because it's all qubits, so it's very simple to follow and to reproduce, that you should. But you're going to do a more complicated version of it with harmonic oscillators coupled to each other and also with not PVMs, but POVMs, okay? That's what you're going to do in, is it today? Today. And then today also, I'm going to, the whole because I didn't have time to do the talk here. We're going to see what happens because this protocol was not, when Masahiro came up with this protocol, he did not come up with the protocol in qubits. He came up with the protocol thinking of quantum fields. And what does this mean in quantum field theory? And what does that mean in quantum field theory in curved spacetimes in particular? Because there are implications. You see what's going on here. If I have the ground state of the field, and I do somehow a measurement and communicate the outcome, maybe I'm able to extract energy from the ground state of the field. What does that mean? Well, I'm effectively creating negative energy densities in the field. Agreed, everyone? This protocol allows you to violate energy conditions. In your ER courses, have you talked a lot about energy conditions? Or if you do things like ADS, CFT, probably you have. What about the others? If I say energy conditions, do you know what I mean? Cool. So today, in the tutorial two, there will be a part in which we will talk about the consequence of this in field theory and how also a particular result of mine of using this to do something with the space-time. And we'll see what that goes. Keep in mind, though, also that tomorrow we're going to have discussion, OK? So here's a message for all of you. Think of all the things we've seen during the course. Think of all the things that you know that are maybe related to the course. And let's talk about it. I really hope that on Friday we have an interactive session. There will be no recording, right? Right? So hopefully we'll all be free or feel free to exchange impressions and opinions and all. Any questions? How many people find this protocol cool? I do, certainly. It's definitely an intuitive that you would do that. But with qubits, if I give you first the arguments of field theory, there's room for people to say, oh, come on. No, I'm not convinced to see how that works. There are subtleties. With qubits, there's no controversy at all. You can do the algebra. Like, it's trivial. Trivial in the mathematics kind of sense. You know what I mean, right? Trivial as in, like, a computer can do it. All right. I'll see you today, later.